you in the mask.
Yeah, everybody in the mask.
Yo, yo, I used to work at Burger King, a king taking orders. Punching my clock, now I'm wanted by the manager. Souping me up, saying,
okay, everybody. This is Eric Mann with my co-host, Manuel Criollo. You're on Voices from the Frontlines. We're on with Gerald McEntee, a very important labor leader, progressive labor leader. And I think, Gerald, I'll start by saying, who would have thought, I mean, there's conservatives inside the AFL, you know that, but
sure.
Who would have thought that Gerald McEntee and Andy Stern and John Wilhelm would not be on the same side of such an important debate? And John Sweeney, so tell us from your point of view, two questions to start with. Where do you see the strength of the AFL-CIO going on the issue of organizing new workers, fighting racism, and taking on the employers? And what are your critiques of the Change to Win coalition right now?
I think that, Sweeney went in 95. When he got there, before him with Lane Kirkland and even farther back with Meany, there was no organizing program within the Federation. At that time, it was the total responsibility of national and international unions, and even today, to a large extent, it is their responsibility. But John created an organizing program inside the Federation. He created an organizing institute that would go out and find young people, people interested in progressive ideas and the labor movement. I mean, he hired them. He had, student programs. He had summer intern programs. He had all of those kinds of things. And he actually set a standard for unions within the AFL-CIO where they would spend 30% of their dues on organizing new members. And this is a federation. They can, the individual unions can do whatever they want to do. There's a revolving door on 16th Street at the AFL-CIO, and they can come and they can go. There's nothing to restrain them. But he set the 30% when he was with SEIU. They went from 500,000 to a million. And our union is spending 30% of our dues on organizing, as are some other unions, not that many, but some other unions, SEIU, granted. I'm not sure in terms of Unite Here. Probably the Here part is spending 30%. Unite, I'm just not sure of. The Teamsters are spending 10% or less on organizing. But John set a standard in terms of organizing. And then in addition to that, he did something else that I think, I hate to use these words, monumental, but, he started a political program inside the Federation that has created since 1995, growing the best grassroots mobilization program literally in the United States. The only one rivaling it now is the right-wing evangelicals, and it's the AFL-CIO playbook that they use. He set large goals. And he set major standards, in terms of the Federation. Now, on the other side of the coin is that since he's been in 95, the world we've lived in is just filled with struggles and challenges. We all know about, we all know where we are in terms of trade, in terms of this orthodoxy of free trade globalization. We're heading for record trade deficits, larger, matter of fact, 25% or so larger than last year. And all of these things, our trade policy, affects working men and women and affects, working men and women that are within the labor movement. You can grow, as the AFL-CIO has, as a federation, grow a couple million, over a period of 4 or 5 years, but you're hemorrhaging out the back in terms of, you know, this incredible, disastrous trade programs that our country practices. I mean, to pick up the paper and see that 27,000 people are going to be laid off by General Motors, UAW members, good jobs for our country, and the fact that they're going to China. It used to be that under NAFTA they were going to Mexico, and now it's even less expensive to go to China. And
but Gerald, let me ask you something.
Go ahead.
I mean, that the you're facing a major. I mean, I was in the UAW as a rank and file organizer for 10 years at the GM Van Nuys plant and stuff like that. Let's just talk for a minute about labor's political clout and the concerns of progressives from without. We saw John Sweeney. We saw John Kerry, and I'll talk about John Sweeney in a minute.
Sure.
When you talk about the evangelicals are for the war in Iraq, but John Sweeney, very early on when the war began, issued a statement also of support for the war. The evangelicals are misogynistic and hate women and are strongly anti-abortion. John Kerry could not barely defend the right of abortion, and when he did, he screwed up around, you know, barely could defend it. There was no discussion. There's tremendous, I mean, certainly I know you come out of a black liberation tradition. You care about that. You know the Democratic Party was totally silent on black and Latino issues throughout this convention and is now very self-critical, you know, of not, you know, talking about Latinos or blacks, while in fact the evangelicals are making inroads because the Democratic Party is afraid to talk about civil rights, not just black votes. So there's a real crisis in the past. We would look to the AFL-CIO for that voice. To be, all right, it's pro-Democrat, it's even very close to the Democrats, but it's supposed to be an independent, progressive voice inside the Democratic coalition. Did you hear it during the during the campaign? I didn't.
No, I think it's I think it's accurate to say that the AFL-CIO and let's also set the record straight, not just the AFL-CIO, but all of the unions in the AFL-CIO.
That's right.
Endorsed John Kerry. And endorsed what he said. Now, Andy came out later and said, well, John Kerry this or Bill Clinton that. But, I mean, he endorsed them, you know, right down the line. Now, in the primaries, there were a couple of us that didn't endorse John Kerry, that endorsed Dean. And we did it because, you know, because of his various positions, whether it was Iraq or whether it was working men and women, whether it was Latinos or whatever. We endorsed them, but then, you know, he just didn't have, in terms of the Democratic Party, the wherewithal to get the nomination. But after that, I mean, we were all for John Kerry because the alternative was, you know, just total desperation, which we face now. But I would say that in terms of blacks and Latinos and women and folks like that, that Sweeney has worked towards some goals in that particular area. I mean, we have constituency groups. We have an executive council that is broader than ever before in terms of the numbers of people that represent national unions on that executive council that represent constituent groups. That represent blacks and women and Latinos on there. The Federation helps monetarily and to a large degree gives a push to organizations, whether it's Latino groups like LACLA or whatever, and to the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists, whether it's the women's movement,
But these are groups, Gerald. I mean, these are groups at the top. I mean, we know that the AFL gives some money to some of what we would call the civil rights establishment.
But not just money. I mean, they bring them in a very transparent way to talk, to discuss, to debate, to listen to their issues. I mean, just 2 weeks ago, and I didn't see any of our so-called insurgents there. But Sweeney and I were there, and there were many invitations that went out to have a meeting, which we have periodically, with the Congressional Black Caucus. You know, where are you guys, or where are you ladies? You know, where are you going, and what do you see, what do you need in terms of the American labor movement? And so, I mean, there's a lot of that kind of discussion that goes back and forth. Is it perfect? No, there's no question about it. It's not perfect. Meeting Sweeney and meeting the Federation, they know where it's at, and they certainly try and go in that direction.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, this is really important, Gerald, that obviously, I mean, you have a long relationship with SEIU, for many of us who, if you just don't take this personally, who have seen AFSCME and SEIU more similarly than different in a good sense of the word. They've seen them as progressive unions who represent people in sometimes very similar constituencies. Sometimes entire governments have some AFSCME units and some SEIU units. Clearly a major split between, at this point, let's talk about a potential split. What is your critique of the change to win? Do you think they have a legitimate critique of the do they have a legitimate reform campaign? What are the differences? And what has led the AFL-CIO? I mean, certainly we wouldn't say that John Wilhelm, Andy Stern, woke up one morning and said, I have a great idea. Let's screw the AFL and get out of here. I mean, these differences are fairly significant, at least.
Yeah.
Help us from your point of view. Explain to the listeners what is the differences and what are your critiques.
I would give a lot of credit to Andy, whom I know very well, but I'd give him an awful lot of credit, and then eventually some of the other folks for making a move, which I consider a positive move. In starting a real debate within the AFL-CIO, a debate around direction, a debate around infrastructure in terms of the Federation. Now that debate has garnered already number one, incredible participation by almost all the unions in the Federation. Where the SEIU and Unite Here and the laborers, whatever, came in with plans to change the Federation, which generated this discussion that is still ongoing, and all unions participated in this, and all unions came in with various ideas and various plans, and then Sweeney put sort of amalgam together of those plans and has presented that to what in fact is the constituency of the American labor movement. I think that Andy has hurt his cause in terms of the way he presented his method of change, and the fact that much of it took on the idea of my way or the highway. I mean, if this doesn't happen in terms of organizing, this doesn't happen in terms of politics, if the Federation is not streamlined to a major degree, which incidentally it is, and Sweeney has taken the position that in order to meet change, bring about change, he's literally going to dislocate 104, 105 people, merge departments, and do those kinds of things. But when Andy took the position of my way or the highway, and that is his position, and then took the position beyond that no matter what change is made within the Federation, whether it's a change in, you know, this inside baseball of Article 20 and 21, or more power to the executive committee, or standards, or collective bargaining, or, you know, mergers or things like that, when his bottom line became the fact that, and also, by the way, John Sweeney's got to go. Well, you know, John Sweeney has, right now, I would judge about 70% of the delegates supporting him. They, in Las Vegas, when we had our last big meeting, the insurgents had 5 unions. They still have 5 unions. Hoffa spoke a couple weeks ago that they'll have more in Chicago. That's inaccurate. They won't have any more. There aren't any more unions that are left that will be ready to signify who they're supporting. The other side has no candidate for a while. It appeared that John would be a candidate of the Coalition to Win, which originally was called Noopsters. But now they have no candidate at all to run against John. And I think it's relatively, I think it's real, if you take the idea of Sweeney leaving after what I consider him, what I consider to be the fact that he's done a good job, and yet they want to drive him out the door, if you would take that out of the picture, the varying sides are very close. I mean, they're close in terms of organizing. It's a matter of numbers. I mean, the Hoffa program is 50% rebate on per capita tax. If the Federation were to do that, it would mean they have to lay off another 100 people and close the doors. Sweeney's proposal is 25% more of Federation money by streamlining the departments within the Federation, but 25% more and more money for politics as well. So I think on the major key issues, with the exception of, you know, John Sweeney's got to go, I think all sides are relatively close.
Well, Gerald, I think we're going to have to leave it here for now, except to say that this has been, as somebody who's been listening, a little confounding, and I hope that maybe next time we can have either you and John or you and Andy on, because one of the things that's hard for me as somebody who has, frankly, great respect for both of you, you know, and I don't say this about necessarily every president of every union in the AFL, is we're trying to understand better what is this argument about. I mean, certainly we don't want a split in the AFL-CIO over an issue that people don't understand what the difference is.
Yeah, well, we don't want a split regardless.
Right, but I'm saying if the differences are profound enough to explain a difference, and people at least can understand it. Right now, I'm not saying, you know, I'm saying that the show is moving in that direction. So we're going to have you on next time, Jerry. I hope you're willing to come back for a second round. This is going national on KPFK.
Thanks for having me.
All right. This is Eric Mann getting out of here. I want to thank you for joining us this week with my co-host, Manuel Criollo. We'd like to thank our guests, John Wilhelm and Gerald McEntee. Today we had music from Femi Kute, The Fugues, Mandrill, and what you're hearing now, Ruben Blades. You can listen to the previous Voices show at www.thestrategycenter.org, yet another W. And we have a new comment line, voices@thestrategycenter.org. We'd like to thank our producer, Alan Minsky, production assistant, Lisa Adler. Today's show was directed by Christine Blasdale and engineered by the amazing Maggie Lapique. This is Manuel Criollo and Eric Mann for Voices from the Frontlines Radio. We'll see you next week, and this is going national.
You've been listening to the 4 o'clock report, Voices from the Frontline Edition, sponsored by you on the People's Radio, KBFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles. Stay tuned here beneath the surface with Susie Weissman. It's coming up next.